the way that I speak, Love, I'll let you know.
Talk radio.
After okay. that, I'm going to hear you.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 3,170. Okay, that's 3,170. Yeah, we're getting up there. I'm very happy that we're getting up there. We have a lot of people who are now starting to tell their stories. They have been for a while. That's why we're 3,170. So anyway, it's a good platform for people to come on who want to tell their stories. And on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we have this. We open this up to the public to come on and tell their stories once they clear it with us. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have other people that come on, and the professionals who work in different areas even than what we do. And we work with them. We have the professionals here speak with them. So anyway, okay. So tonight we have a wonderful guest. Her name is Melissa Santana. Okay. But first, let me read the mission statement. We do have a nice panel starting to build up here. And tonight is Bill's wife's birthday. And I told him to go out and show her a good time. So I don't expect him to be on tonight. Anyway, okay, here's the deal. First of all, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. And number one is educating the public. That's what we do. That's what we're going to do tonight, too, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, those last three that I always mention, prevention, intervention, and recovery, are very important. And I want people to understand they can call in at 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118 if they want to be a part of listening to the show, be on the panel. We have room for about three more. And, you know, just to be a part of the show, you can do that. If you want to just call in and listen, that's fine too, all right? And I'll put that on the screen here. I am in the studio, so I'm running that. So anyway, also, too, our website is NASCA, that's NASCA.org, that's NASCA.org, and you can find a ton of information on our website. You go down to the red blocks, you open up those blocks, and it covers all different types of things to learn about with child abuse, okay? So enough of that being said. I do have our guest tonight, and we do have Lori Purcell here. She's like my co-host. Yes, she is. And we have also Philip. He's here, and our guest is here. And if there's someone I missed, forgive me. Anyway, and I'm here. I'm Carol Levine, and I'm vice president of NASCA, and I'm happy to be here. So enough said. Melissa, I don't know. The name of your town is kind of a strange. It's EUCLID. How do you say that?
It's actually Euclid, Ohio. Euclid.
Euclid. Okay. Yeah, I never heard that before. Okay, so you are from Euclid, Ohio, and you are a survivor of both child abuse and later domestic violence. Oh, honey, you've been in my house. Yes, you have. Okay, so what we'd like for you to do now is to start out by telling your story, and we will go from there, okay? Go ahead.
Sounds good. Thank you. And to clarify, so for those who know Cleveland, Ohio, it is Euclid is just basically a suburb of that. So I'm basically up the street from Cleveland. And Cleveland is where I was born and raised. And so Euclid, however, is where I've actually finally been able to purchase a home and all that. So buying into the wonderful American dream, been wonderful to do that. But going back to, growing up and all those things, I grew up with a mother who was incredible. She was a single mom. She did everything she could for me. But I was a child who, because she had her own vices, because she had been in abusive relationships. And so the one that she had still been recovering from when I was born was the relationship she had with my brother's father. So we don't have the same fathers. And so he was, raised by a different father, and unfortunately it was also her first marriage, so she was very young. She marries him. She has, a child with him, but unfortunately she isn't a domestic violent one. I've learned many more details about it as I've gotten older, and so I know that it was definitely very severe. He would insult her, but then also there will be times where, once she told me she was even coming down the steps because he had woken her up out of her sleep. She's coming down in a robe. He unfortunately, he was with his friends, he was intoxicated, but he still was asking her to either cook for him or do something. I don't know if he didn't like those spots or whatever it was, but he then hit her in front of everyone and causing her to fall down the steps in the middle of the night when she had just woken up. So it's just things like that. There was other times where she would have to hide from him, and he would find her and then humiliate her in front of whoever was there. And it wasn't just what's been striking for me and still something to grapple with is not just the many times that he did that, but it was also that there were people around. And I know that there's many reasons why we don't always, intercede, but it was hard to hear that, right, as her daughter, that there were so many times where there were people unfortunately there and witnessed it and didn't necessarily, weren't able to help or didn't know how, and they might not have known exactly how to assist in all that. But as a result, her coping mechanism became alcohol, so that was her way of being able to at least cope with things and numb the pain I felt like that she was trying to experience. She never exactly said that to me, but that is what I, gathered from it with the little bit that I knew at the time. And so I get that that was her coping mechanism, but it was hard being raised in that way because she was absent a lot of the time. She was there but not there. And she would not be sober for many occasions. It was also, confusing for me because we would go to church, but then right after church we would go to the liquor store. So I, started to associate, are you supposed to drink alcohol all the time? Is this, what you do? So it was hard to differentiate that. I knew that I didn't personally like it, so I grew up really, anti-alcohol because I saw what it did to her, and I didn't want to associate with it. But so as a result, it definitely caused a lot of division between us. And as a result, there was a lot of things that went on. So there was one time where she was dating a lot of different individuals, so that was also difficult. I already did not have my own biological father in my life. He was not there. She had met him at one point, but actually at the time I didn't know who he was. She knew who he was, but I didn't, because she had told me that there was one of several people that could potentially be my father. And so I grew up with that, idea of, not knowing exactly who it could be. It might be one of these people that I know, but I never knew for sure. And it definitely caused a lot of, confusion as, whenever you're raised in that kind of environment. I always wanted to know, who I was, who I was made by, connections to things. And there were times where I also wanted to know because I didn't feel a connection to her and I didn't have the relationship with her that I very much wanted. So I really was hopeful, it would be nice to have the other parent to be able to connect with them and know more about them and maybe have some kind of solace. And at one point I developed resentment towards whoever he was because of the fact that he wasn't there. And I felt like in my eyes even though I'm sure he might not have even been aware of what was going on, but to me it was just like, well, you left me here in this situation, and you're not here to save me. So I remember growing up thinking about all that. And either way, I also became a very, very quiet kid. So I'm here now, talking, do my thing. I even have a podcast now. But growing up, that was not the case. I was super, super, super silent. And so, like, it was to the point where I don't speak unless spoken to. So, like, at school, I would regard the teachers, like, with the highest authority. I, like, idolized them. I loved them. I loved everything they did, how caring they were, the compliments they would give me, because I wouldn't hear that at home. And so I would always want to do whatever they said. So, like, really big teacher's pet. I just love that validation. So I would always crave it. But I even remember once, like, I even had an accident at school. So it was, like, in elementary school, which is, you know, common for, like, most students. But the reason why was because I did not want to interrupt the teacher. So, like, I could have asked to leave, but I just wanted so much to not interrupt, like never break any rules, that I was willing to put myself in that situation. I remember my brother had to come get me, like it was a whole thing, just because I didn't want to interrupt them or say anything. So I was always like kept to myself. I kept a lot of like internal thoughts. And so I always was trying to make sense of what was happening around me, but not knowing exactly how to do that. I had some people that I would like vent to and things like that, but it was a lot that I kept inside. She did date. She had a lot of partners, and so one of them did attempt to try to like touch me at one point. But the thing that was interesting, so sexually, but the thing that was interesting was he tried to say that he had confused me with my mother, something like that. I think was his words. Of course, either way, preposterous. Like it was completely impossible. But I'm just trying to remember how ridiculous it was, the excuse that he gave. But I also remember that it was forceful enough. He wasn't successful. He had attempted. He wasn't able to, but I remember being, I was under the age of 10, and I remember at least having to fight him off as hard as I was able to do it. I had to, like, I remember having to literally use all of my strength to get him off. Mm-hmm. So, and then telling my mother the next day about it, but unfortunately she asked me, well, are you sure that it happened? Like, she asked me questions like that. So then I remember, again, feeling like, further hurt by her. So these were things, these were the kind of things that would happen between us that would make, you know, cause a division. So then she eventually, though, however, did break up with him. He also, like, I guess, I don't know if he ever, like, came to admit it, but he was in the church. He was, like, he attended the church that my mom went to. And so, like, he eventually left it and, you know, all these things. So that occurred. But there would be moments like that where she wouldn't always be able to respond. I feel like now as an adult, I'm able to look back on it, and I've at least been able to come to a point where I get where she was, but when I was growing up, I couldn't, and so I grew up very angry with her, and I could tell she wanted a better relationship, but I didn't know how to help her understand that you're not creating it for me, so, and I don't know how to teach you, because you should be the one teaching me things, so I don't know how to help you get that. I also was very resentful because my mother is also, she's Puerto Rican, so she came here. She immigrated here from Puerto Rico at the age of 15, and she's been working, like, factory jobs. That's always been her life, like, hard labor, things like that, working with her hands. I did find it very admirable that she was able to buy a house. So I did grow up in a house with her. Like, she was able to buy it when I was in second grade. So I remember that and being very proud of that accomplishment, but also having to balance a lot of, like, balance her checkbook. Like, I've known her Social Security number since I was about 5. Like, she's always had me do all the work. She learned English on her own, but she would always feel confident doing a lot of – I was dual roles. Like, I was secretary and also, like, and daughter and also being a student. So, like, but I remember being upset about that because I was like, I don't feel like I get to just be me. Like, I feel like I'm always having to worry about what you have going on. And, like, so it was just, it would cause a lot. So,
okay, honey. Okay, hold on. Yeah, you told us a whole bunch. And that's good. Slow down, though, because you're sort of like an auctioneer, and that's cool, too. But on the other hand, we need to grasp what you're saying, too. Listen, I can understand, and I'm sure that everyone on this panel can understand, you know, the feelings that you had, because we want a family like Leave It to Beaver. I use them as an example. It doesn't happen very often, does it? Okay? So you were the mom, or your mother was the mom that went out and worked, and she put a lot of stuff on you. She did, like you were saying. She had you helping with the bills and all these other – I can understand where all the resentments came in. when were you ever a kid? Because think about it. Your mother had all these guys coming and going. And I have to say one thing about single moms, okay, because I was a single mom at one point because I left my husband, my children's biological father, because he was a nut, okay? So, but you do tend to go out, you know, you do tend to go out and have dates, and as long as the children are well taken care of and you know, but if you have too many dates and the kids, you know, they start to, you know, feel resentment towards the mother, and then, and this is all very, you know, true, and it's also very common. All right, it's common, and I get it. And then with the alcohol after church, well, your mom's an alcoholic probably, okay? I'm an alcoholic, all right? I didn't know I was an alcoholic because I was working. Think about it. I was working, taking care of two kids, and drinking like a fish when I came home. But I took care of my children. I fed them. I clothed them. You know, we had TV time together, watched silly programs like Leave It to Beaver and all that other stuff. And they did their homework. So I didn't look at myself as being an alcoholic. But when you have a problem drinker in the family and the bio father, I get that point too, because I don't know who my bio father is either. All right? I got ancestry. My daughter sent away for me, and it came in the mail, and I spit in the vial because that's all you have to do. And I sent it back. And I learned a lot, like I have Italian, I have Swiss, I have French, I have German. The only thing, you know, on my mother's side of the family, because she was my mother, was the German. Okay. So that shows you something's wrong in the family unit there. And I found out much later on that I was the rape kid. My mother got raped once. One time is too many, and out I popped. And that's why she always hated me. So you see, we go through these things in our life. We go through these things in our life. And we're either going to make it or we're not going to make it. And you did make it. All right? You're doing fine. You absolutely are doing fine today. And did you ever see a therapist or a counselor or anything?
Absolutely. As an adult.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly had. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, no, I definitely appreciate it. It took me time, but yes, I definitely went later on.
Mm-hmm. Because you have your memories, you know. Some people, you know, they dissociate. And their memories are gone, or only parts of the memories are there. And they don't remember things. And then they're like trying to put a puzzle together. And in life, sometimes they get those pieces in that puzzle. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But they always have questions, and they always, you know, suffer. You know, you said that you isolated. A lot of us did that. I did that for a very short time because I have a big mouth and I like to get out there. I didn't want to like stay like cocooned for too long of a time. But I did too, internalize. And I'm going to go to Lori in a second here. A lot of us do that, and then we'll get back to your story. A lot of us do that. We internalize our feelings of sadness, our feelings of sometimes hatred, you know, towards a parent or whomever's abusing us or neglecting us or whatever the case might be. You know, we don't want to look at it as mommy and daddy as being who they were and are if they're still alive. And because then that puts guilt on us. I'm supposed to love my parent, but I always tell people this. All right, because it's the truth. People out there have to be good parents for their children to love them, okay? And I don't know what your relationship is. We'll get back to that, you know, with your mother today when you go back to your story. But a lot of times there's feelings of hatred, there's feeling of sadness, there's feelings of all different types of things. And we will certainly talk. About we have like, 2 days left of Child Abuse Prevention Month, Awareness Month, talk a little bit about, you know, what the signs are of our child abuse and what we do go through on a psychological level, because we all go through it, those of us who have been abused one way or another. So let me put Lori on, I'm sure she has some questions, then I'll go down to Philip. Go ahead, Lori.
Hey, how you doing? I'm telling you, I got a positive vibe right off the bat from you. You know a lot about yourself already. You figured it out, your puzzle pieces, and you're young still. I do feel really bad that you had to go through what you did, because that can drive you crazy. You don't even know you're coming or going to be safe, not safe. You know, it's a lot for a kid to a shoulder. And for some reason, you made wonderful choices. You know, you knew what you wanted. You went after what you wanted. You went to the places where you felt safe and attended to and whatever, instead of, like, on the streets, you know, doing everything else. So I'm really impressed that at your age you've done all that. I think you're doing really well.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Trying of electron there, but I'm glad, you know, I definitely think that life is great in that way when we can see things as the lessons that they are.
I mean, the way you come out, because I used to be a silent kid too, and I would internalize everything. What I'm hearing, you're the opposite now. So I love it. I actually love that you came out of that silence into who you are now.
Absolutely.
Yes, I want to hear more.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Let's go down. Thank you for that, Lori. Let's go down to Philip and see if he has a question or he wants to make a comment or if he wants to listen a little more. Go ahead.
I might just like to listen, please.
You want to listen a little bit more? Okay. And all right, we can get back to your story. Now, when I stop you, remember where you were, okay? All right.
Yes.
Okay, good. So, but anyway, yeah, you know, Lori made some really valid, good points here. I mean, a lot of us who have been abused at home, one way or another, whether it be physically, sexually, emotionally, right, or neglected, too much work was put on you. When were you a kid, you know what I'm saying? And I'm glad you had the teachers in school, though, to look up to and who did, you know, give you special attention. You know, you were like the teacher's pet at one point. Because when we're kids, we crave, for God's sake, we crave, you know, acceptance. And most of us on NASCA, we didn't get that, okay? So you were able to, you know, have that in school. So go on with your story, and you know, I know that you have Santana Says, and we're going to talk about that later on. You have a podcast called Santana Says. I just want people out there to hear that, and there's a lot of people that listen through the computer, so that's something for you to keep in mind. And she has been able to make good choices in life. She didn't get into alcohol. Boy, did I get into alcohol. Holy Christopher. She didn't get into other drugs. I say other drugs because anything that alters your brain, that is a drug, okay? I don't care whether it's alcohol, whether it's pills, or whether it's shooting up heroin, or snorting this or snorting that, whatever. They're all drugs. And it appears that you didn't get into that, okay? So let me ask you something, and then you go on with your story. Now, look. Most Catholic churches, a lot of them anyway, put it this way, they have problems, let's put it that way. But you know what, so do all churches. But this Catholic church saw me walking down the street and grabbed me and said, "You have problems, lady." And I said, "Yes, I do," because I did. And they took care of me, and that's where my counseling came from. That's how they worked with me. We had a huge prayer group. And in that prayer group, there were 200 people, so they come from all walks of life. So there happened to be therapists in there, and they took a liking to me, or whatever. Maybe they felt sorry for me, I don't know. But they helped me, all right, they helped me. So that's where my therapy came from, and it did change my life around. Now, let me ask you something. How old were you when you started to get therapy, and when did you feel like you needed it? Go ahead.
Well, I would definitely, yeah, that came way later. It wasn't anywhere near, and actually I never really got therapy specifically. I learned about my mother in the process of the therapy, but she wasn't actually the topic or the reason why I went. So that would, and that would relate back to the story piece. So there was that whole chapter with her. And so, you know, growing up with her and the internalizing and all of those things and her not always being able to see things when they occurred, like with the boyfriends and things like that. But there was also, there was like certain openings, I would say. So then there was, but there, the reason why I say certain things happened before the age of 10, I actually, there is a lot about my childhood that I don't remember, like you mentioned. So yeah, I can't, I haven't, even with therapy, I haven't been able to unlock certain memories. Of course, now working in the mental health field, I know that our brain, you know, helps protect us. So maybe, you know, I don't need to, but it has been like, you know, hard though to grapple with that, right? When you're like, oh, but that's interesting. Like, why don't I know about that? Or like, you know, there's certain stages that like ages, and now that I have children, I'm trying to remember certain things from my childhood, and I just cannot, for some reason, you know, like recover that. As a result, like she definitely you know, was with me. But the reason why 10 always sticks out to me is because she did finally get a great partner though at the age when I was 10, and so my stepfather, and so that was always the father figure that I did have growing up. And so that's why I'm always, to me, there's always, like, the before 10 and then after 10, like, when he was around. So I feel like those are the two different stages. But interestingly enough, we were lucky that he was a great partner, because prior to that, my mother had actually been set up before with individuals that were, like, in jail. So I actually remember visiting a prison, like, with her. Like, it was a blind date. It was literally a blind date situation for her, but she took me with her. But, like, that's what I mean. Like, she wasn't always doing things that were, like, age-appropriate. I kind of felt like it probably wasn't the best, but at the time, I'm like, well, I'm a kid. Can't really tell her no. So, like, here we go. But I remember it, like, I remember that vividly, like, entering a prison and being like, okay, this is scary. Why is she talking to a person here? Like, why is this even somebody you want to talk to? But we did. And so there were moments like that as well that occurred. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, either way, I just didn't, relationship is the main thing I wanted to say, is that, so I didn't really know what it looks like to have successful relationships, because that's a big part of my life, is that I didn't know that up until that point, because I really hadn't seen her in any successful relationships. I don't really, you know, I was still working on the relationship with myself. And so I think it was very interesting that you said I did not develop alcohol, correct? But then I also actually thought that I was doing really well. So I was like, oh, yeah, like, I mean, so I continued with the school thing. So, like, I went to college also, graduated in 4 years. So I'm like, well, I'm doing amazing in life. Like, I think I'm doing, like, in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm doing really good. But then I did, it was, like, after graduating from college, and it was after my first job, I reunited with someone that I had met in high school, relationship-wise. Mm-hmm. And so, like, and in an effort to not go back home with mom, because I had made a promise to myself, like, okay, well, once I leave home, I'm not going back. Like, I'm good. I'm just going to do me, and I'm going to figure out my own path. He had offered to let me move in with him, and I took him up on that, and I was like, sure, because I had a job, but I was, like, in between it. And I wasn't in Cleveland, so I was, like, trying to come back home to Cleveland. And so it was, like, a perfect opportunity. I was like, great, I'll live with you, and then, you know, we'll just, and it's somebody I know and all that. So we're dating, and unfortunately that I ended up finding myself in a domestically violent relationship. And so even though I escaped the alcohol, I didn't escape the generational curse. So I wasn't there for her abuse. Like, I was there for the aftermath when she was with the alcohol. My brother actually did see it, though. He was there. He witnessed her actually getting hit and all of those things. So that was the trauma that he experienced. But I, you know, I got, even though I got all that, I did not escape it. And so I found myself in a relationship. But I didn't know that. That's like many survivors. I didn't know that that's what I was in. So I just, and since I had nothing to compare it to, I thought that it was a healthy relationship. I was like, well, maybe this is just what happens. Like, it's good sometimes, and then it's bad. And maybe sometimes they yell when they're upset. They get in your face. And so I didn't know how to really recognize it for what it was. But, you know, and even when it got physical, because it did, it rose to the level of, I did get hit before. I wasn't, this is how I knew where my self-esteem was shattered, because I never thought to, like, stick up for myself or, like, oh, I deserve better than this. I probably shouldn't be in this situation. Those thoughts never occurred to me. And, like, years later when I would tell other people, I remember someone telling me, like, oh, well, my husband, like, one time, yeah, he tried to essentially, which they use the word choke, but I know now is like strangle the person. And so they tried to, you know, use that. And I had called the police immediately. Like, I called the police immediately on him because I was like, no, I'm definitely not going to stand for that. And I remember hearing her story and thinking, wow, that's interesting that that was your immediate thought. How come I never stuck up for myself in that way? Because I never thought that. I would have all these situations happen, and I would just take them. And that is where I retreated back to being that small, the kid that was quiet and didn't stick up for herself and wouldn't say things. I felt like that in that relationship, and so I would not say things. There were years that people didn't know, my friends didn't know what was happening. Some of them have told me, though, about situations that seemed kind of weird, like things that they had witnessed, and some of, again, are memories that I can't retrieve. So, like, a cousin of mine was like, yeah, one time you both came to an event, and I thought it was weird because he kind of slammed the door in your face, and you seemed uncomfortable, and I don't remember any of those things. And I'm like, you know, and she was like, thought it was off, but I didn't know exactly how to act, so I didn't know, you know. So I was like, wow, so here I am, like, my mom had people seeing things, not knowing how to intercede, and I'm over here in a unhealthy relationship just like she was. So that was, like, another big chapter for me in my life was having endured that relationship as well.
Well, stop right there. Like, I want to say something. Hold on a second.
Absolutely.
You know what? Yeah. I think you're so cute and funny. All right, listen to me. I looked at your website. Yeah, I put it on there and see you tonight on tonight's show. I don't know if you saw it or not. But anyway, you just said something that sparked something in me, because other people could see, especially with my first husband, that he was very sarcastic. Okay. And a lot of us, we grow up around sarcasm, and it goes in one ear and out the other, and we don't even know, you know, that people are being rude or whatever, and we take it. And then I do remember one time when someone said, Carol, he was swinging at you. Don't you realize he took a swing at you? I said, yeah, but I ducked. That's not the point, okay? I ducked. Are you nuts? So, I had seen so much violence in the type of relationships that my mother had and so forth, that I became the same person in that. I didn't know how to pick. I still don't know how to pick good guys. It does something to you, okay? It just simply does. Because, you know, guys can be so... Now, Philip, I'm not talking about you, okay? I'm saying guys can be so, they can be so nice and sweet and so good and so this and that. And you fall into their prey, that's P-R-E-Y, okay, if they are a guy that has problems. And we seem to many times pick that type of personality because that's what we knew and felt comfortable with after a while. As we were growing up with, this is all we knew because this is what was put before us, whether you had your father, your bio father, in your life or not. You saw violence, and somehow I think we become a little bit numb to the violence around us if we have it too often many times put in front of us. Or we become frightened. Am I going to be next? Okay, mommy's getting hit. Am I going to get hit next? Okay. And we seem to tolerate things more of a volatile type of personality without even realizing that it's not quite normal. So you see, when people talk about domestic violence, they don't understand the ramifications of it when children, even if they just watch it, their little minds are absorbing all the things that are happening. And you would think, now, you said with the booze with your mom, you were able to stay away from it. But yet when it comes to relationships, it then starts to do something to us where we can't, choose appropriately. All right? We have to learn boundaries. What are boundaries? You know what I'm saying? And I'm at my age, and I don't feel like saying it on air right now, but I'm a lot older than you, honey, okay? I still wrestle with boundaries because I'm too forgiving or I'm not aware of the fact that it's not quite normal. So when you say that you're, you know, when people say, yes, I'm going for therapy and all this other stuff, that's wonderful. They should be, maybe, you know, if that's the way they want to go. I don't push people into any direction. But we certainly do need it, many of us, because of the backgrounds that we grew up in. So why, I'll look at some guy and I'll think, oh, he's a nice-looking guy, and I'll talk to him and I'll think, oh, you know what, he's a dork. He's not my type of person, because I grew up in an atmosphere where I was used to a different type of lifestyle, but that lifestyle wasn't good. So this is, you know, this happens to a lot of people. And those of us who have seen too much domestic violence, because either one of the parents or it's in your household, right, we have to learn that dorky-looking people can be nice, too. They can be good. And, you know, we have to learn what's good in people and stay away from the bad. And then if we find someone who's toxic, yeah, get rid of them, you bet. So that's where I'm at right now, too. I mean, I've run into a situation where I was madly in love, but it wasn't right, and that person's gone. And it hurts, but you know what? There's always tomorrow, honey. Oh, yes, there is. There's always tomorrow. So let me ask you something. Are you in a relationship right now?
Nope. Not at all.
No. And you know what? You don't have to be. Okay?
Right.
So, I mean, some women think they have to be. And, you know, in a relationship, I'm alone. I probably shouldn't say that. But I'm alone, and I have my own house and all this other stuff. And you know what? I'm not being screamed at. I'm not being told I'm stupid or whatever, which I had to learn that I'm not. But all the things that went along with it in the volatile situations that so many of us get into, you know, now I'm finding peacefulness. And it's kind of nice. I'm my own boss. I don't have to tell people when I'm going, when I'm not going, or answer to anybody, okay? And quite frankly, considering the past that I had, this is like a dream, a good one, not a nightmare, but a good dream. So in your relationships, do you know what type of guy you like?
I do. I definitely have put in a lot of thought into it, actually. So, like, I'll even write, like, I've even written, like, poetry around it, like, what I would like to have and what I would like to look like. And, I mean, I've definitely dated, so, like, I've at least tried. But I do think that I've absolutely been taking my time. And because I actually know what I would like it to look like versus what I would no longer like it to look like, and since I feel like I would not like to stand for certain things, it has actually made me single. Like, in the process, I feel like it's, you know, I'm no longer in a rush. I think there was also a point in time where I agree with what you said as far as, like, we sometimes do attach, like, value to being in a relationship and, like, fulfillment to that, and I was one of those people. And I also, there was a point in time where I just didn't want to be alone, and I'm so glad that, like, it didn't force me into yet another relationship that was, like, not, that wouldn't have also served me. So I was able to get past that stage, and now I no longer feel those things. But I also had to get to a place where I was comfortable with my own company. So, like, I actually used to get that advice of, like, take yourself out and, you know, take yourself to the movies or go out to eat. And I thought that was, like, the weirdest thing ever. I was like, who does that? Like, people actually, why would you go by yourself? You're going to look like the weirdo. And I'm like, now I love it, though. But I am telling you, when I first heard that, I was like, you guys are weird. That doesn't seem normal. But now I understand, you know. And I was like, well, actually, you're the one not normal because you're not, you know, why are you so uncomfortable with yourself? Like, you're actually pretty cool. Like, you just gave yourself that opportunity. And so it's like, once I did come to terms with it, I was like, wow, I'm actually good to myself, you know, and I actually, you know, can do that. And so that's been great for me. So now if the relationship comes, I would love, I mean, sure. I mean, I'm not going to act like I don't desire that companionship, but am I as in a rush for it or anything like that like I was? No. So, you know, that's where I feel like I'm currently.
And let me ask Lori something about that. Lori, if you felt like going out and having a bite by yourself, like going into a restaurant or something, are you comfortable enough with yourself to do that? I mean, would you do it and think nothing of it?
Oh, God, I am so envious of both of you being able to get up and do what you're doing. Totally envious. I only wish that I could do what you've been doing. I was matched with a person I knew would never work out. But what happened was I ended up with a severely handicapped son who can't survive with a split of the marriage. And I needed, and I still need for my son to be able to live home, my husband's income. So they're all over me constantly. You know, I can't get rid of them. I had to move to a house that had an extra living room in it just so they could have their space and stay out of my face. But seeing me actually even go to a restaurant without them, I'm here like 44 years with him. No, I don't see it at all. I would love to be able to do it, though. You know, but I'm kind of held prisoner here, and I can't get out. So, yeah, I'm very envious of what you're, both of you have done and what you've had and how you're able now to choose what you know you want. You know, I mean, that's amazing to have come from a background like yours from your younger years. You're so sure of yourself. What I did want to comment on are those unretrieved memories. The brain basically is protecting you, is what it's actually doing. I wouldn't be too anxious to find something that you have to look that hard for, because it's probably not a good memory. If it's good, it'll come to you again. You know, it's like move forward, which you've done. I got to ask you, how old are you?
34.
Okay,
I'm
my guess. I know it. Yep. Look at all you've done.
She's a baby. Go ahead.
She is. Look at all you've done.
I know. It's amazing. I've got her bio right in front of me. It's just, when I look at it, I'm like blown away. I mean, I've gotten to where I am today. It took a lot of schooling off and on and all this other stuff, but the years went by off and on too. So she's 34 years old, and she's done so much, and she's got her own podcast. That's good. I mean, there's just so many things. And she likes school, too. She loves school, I can tell. And that's a good thing. I had so many panic attacks. I finally wrote my book, Panic Child, A Harrowing True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect. It's all over the world. And if that wasn't supposed to happen, okay? So people out there, be careful, because I don't get any royalties. But I am thankful. I don't even know how it happened, because I am in the library, Book of Congress, or whatever the heck you call it. I had an attorney and all that. So they can't say that they wrote the book, you know what I'm saying? But somehow my book got into the hands of many different publishers or whatever. And like I'm with Author House and with a whole bunch of them. So that's how my book got all over the world. And you know what? At this point in my life, I'm thankful enough for that. Okay, that's like payment to me. It really is. But I went through, it's not fair, but it's like, I'll settle with that. I don't care. Now, what we do when we are, you know, survivors of child abuse so often, we write our books or we play our music. I love to sing. My son's a guitarist. I mean, what a wonderful guitar player he is. And, you know, we do all different kinds of things. Artwork, a lot of people are into, you know, drawing. I have a lot of friends through NASCA that when I did presentations, I'll get back to it again, I think. I'm not sure. We live in a crazy world. I don't want to get picked off. But, you know, well, I was doing a lot of presentations, and I would have them draw pictures for the presentations, and people were actually coming up and taking pictures of the pictures I was using for the presentations. And so that shows you we may have had all of our problems in the past, whatever they might be, okay? Not everyone's the same. But we have a talent somewhere. Lori has tons of talent. And I love, you know, going online and watching what she creates and so forth. And there are other friends I have that, you know, are artists, you know, and they draw pictures, like I said, or they make their music and things like that. Now we write our books and we do presentations, and you have a podcast. That's wonderful. And let me see, what does it say here about Planned Parenthood? I'm also a bilingual peer educator coordinator for Planned Parenthood in Greater Ohio, where I educate adult health ambassadors about various areas of sexual health. What? Explain that. Go ahead.
Sure. So I have a full-time job where I do social work, but I was, after the pandemic, I had actually applied. I applied all over because I actually was one of the people that lost my job, unfortunately, which I loved. And so I applied all over. I had actually applied to be a part of Planned Parenthood during that time. And at the time they did, it sounded like a nice breakup. They were like, oh, we don't have anything like in your area expertise, but we'll keep your resume on file. We'll like contact you when we can, like if something opens up. So I figured that meant like I'll never hear from them again, but that was nice. Nice to meet you. So then, but actually they did get this grant to start a pilot program, and it was for Spanish speakers. So they wanted to be able, they already engage a lot of youth with their like peer education program, but they wanted to be able to not only engage adults, but then adults that speak Spanish. And so essentially make them also peer educators in the world of sexual health, but like have somebody, you know, train them in these different areas so they could then go in the community and have these conversations and presentations on sexual health. And so they needed somebody to help facilitate that program, and that person needed to also be bilingual so that they can run the program completely in Spanish. So that is what I do with them. So I actually, last year was the pilot year, and then I got brought on for a second year, so it's my second year with them now. But in the process, I do help facilitate a program. It's called Embajadores de Salud. And so I do get to basically essentially train them and then all these different things, and then also supervise the deliverables. But in the process, we're engaging a new population now, but also still using that framework of peer education, which has been very successful as far as, you know, getting word of mouth out, you know, on these different topics. And in the process, they do touch on, you know, a lot of things where, you know, some of which we're talking to about today, and of course, I'm sure have been mentioned on many other shows, but they do talk about things like healthy relationships and advocating for sexual health and different things like that. And since it is Planned Parenthood, we do educate on abortion and other services as well. But that's what that position is.
Well, you know, that's, you said 10 mouthfuls there, and that's good. I'm sitting here laughing because it says that you talk a lot. You talk very fast. Yes, you do. But you're very, very, you also say that you're, let's see, where is it? Now I lost the line. But anyway, that you're driven. You are driven. You have your belief systems, and you're just so bubbly, and you're so driven, and you're just so into all the things that you do. I think it's very important, I truly do, that we learn more about, you know, people, especially those who come from, you know, homes that are bad and all this other stuff, without going into details, you know, where there's a lot of neglect and a lot of emotional abuse, and that we have no self-esteem so many times. I had to grow up and get out of that and so forth and put the blame where the blame belonged. And those of us who suffered from incest and all this other stuff that really brings us down. But, you know, you speak about teaching about sexuality. I remember going when I was in high school. They tried to teach about sexuality. And I remember going into a room, you know, a classroom, and they would talk about how you get pregnant and all this other stuff. And it was so dry, you know what I'm saying? It was just like something that it didn't really stick with me. I was bored, okay?
Right.
But people, it depends on how you present it, and it's so important to learn about sexuality the right way, the wrong way, and why. See, so often people spout out all kinds of things, and they don't say why. Parents do that with their children. Because I told you so. Not good enough. Kids have brains. They're not stupid. Okay, kids are not stupid. And they need to, you know, you can sit them down instead of smacking them in the head. Oh, my mother used to love to punch me in the head. And so I have like one really bad ear because I'm like that. Remember the movie, The Christmas Story, I think it's called, and the kid got whacked in the ear and he couldn't hear right after that? Well, that's sort of like what I am with my left ear. And, you know, I mean, kids, they have brains. You can sit them down in an appropriate way, speak to them about sexuality, about anything else, and when they ask a question, don't say, because I told you so. That's not good enough. Explain to them why. It's important. And like you don't tell kids, you know, to talk to strangers, and then they say, but why? You say, don't talk to strangers, but why? But you don't give them answers. You know what I'm saying? And that goes for any part of bringing children up. You know, it's a very, very important thing to sit down with your children and tell them things, teach them things, and give them answers, and don't leave them hanging. So with this class or whatever it is that you run, okay, tell us a little something about it. I mean, how do you teach people about sexuality and all that?
Oh, man. So I would definitely say that, as you mentioned, I do think that it's that style, though. So I do try to make use of my energy in that way where, you know, when appropriate, trying to keep it as light as possible because I already – so I do try to – and that's – so that is everywhere. So with these classes, but then also on the podcast and when I do my own presentation. So speaking of those, I hear you on that. It's because I do try to keep it at least a little bit lighter just because I already know how heavy it is. So a lot of when I do go into these topics, I actually say that from the beginning. You know, it's like just as a disclaimer, but also just as a recognition. Like I don't feel like we need to ignore the difficulty that may come with it or like try to act like it's not present. If anything, we should lean into it, but then also make it clear that, you know, let's recognize that, but then let's use this as an educational opportunity to then know how we can have a proper conversation about it and then what resources are there around it. So a big thing I like to do is in those classes, start it off, you know, that way, welcome any and all questions, because I feel like that's the other thing that sometimes happens is that people are afraid to ask questions when it comes to these, but I feel like we can't have enough questions because that's the only way we're actually going to learn about it. And I feel like actually sit with it and learn and grow from it. And so I definitely welcome those, but I definitely feel that it's always helpful to have resources as well, like just something that they can draw upon and do all that. And so that is, in these classes, that absolutely happens. But then I also, what I love about this group is that we also get to tap into cultural identity. And so given the fact that it was a unique population that we were attempting to serve, I love the fact that, and not all of this, some of this I do on my own, but some of this Planned Parenthood did intentionally was to incorporate it and connect it to social justice. And so, like, and to diversity and to intersectionality. And so we will talk about all that and then reemphasize how this is important on a diversity level and, like, why this is needed in our world. So we do it that way.
Right. That's good. That's good. And kids need to be, you know, taught. This is just my opinion, okay? I think anyone, you know, teenagers need to have someone like you to talk to about sexuality and also about sex in general. And then, two, what happens? I mean, why don't people take more birth control pills? You know, it makes no sense to me. But before we go into that, I have a 216 area code number here. Who am I speaking to? 216? Can you? Who's
Hi. Well, my name is Nancy.
Oh, okay, Nancy. I hear you. You haven't been listening that long. I think I just saw you pop in. But anyway, I'm glad you're here, okay? That's good. So I'll call on you in a few minutes after you have a chance to listen more. You might have a question or something. Okay, Nancy. Okay. Okay, so. So all right, that's good. So what I'm talking about here is I don't understand with society. I'm not going to point fingers or anything. I happen to be pro-life, not pro-choice, because I believe that the minute the sperm hits the egg, that's a baby. You know why I believe that? Because I came from florists, people who are flower people. They grew all kinds of flowers. And I watched them put seeds in the ground. And up, you know, after a while of nurturing into Mother Nature and all this other stuff, all of a sudden there was a beautiful flower. Well, to me, it's the same thing like with a child. Okay, you have the seed, and then it becomes the beautiful child. So that's my thought on it, okay? And that doesn't mean anything, but I'm just telling you how I feel. But I wonder why society doesn't take more birth control pills. Do you speak to them about taking birth control pills so they don't have to go to the next step?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely mentioned as well. It's absolutely part of the – we actually have a whole section on that also for both the adults mm-hmm. and the youth. So that is – contraception is absolutely a whole section that is touched upon. Abortion actually is not – when we actually educate on it, it's not that we are educating them to encourage others to take advantage of that resource. We educate mm-hmm. more on what is it. Just like, you know, like literally its existence. Like, what is it and all that? But it's also not the only thing that Planned Parenthood provides. It's just what it's associated with, you know, more in the media.
I get it. And I'm not going to sit here and have a debate about abortion. That's people's choice, you know, what they want, you know, like with rape and incest. I mean, come on. I have my reservations about that. And I did get pregnant when I was 17 through my last rape, we'll put it that way. But God took care of that one because I had, you know, I didn't have to have an abortion. I miscarried. So I always feel like I have a baby up in heaven. And I just know I'm going to go there. Yes, I do. I don't know. I hope so. But anyway, let's see what Nancy has to say here. Nancy, you've listened a little bit. Do you have a question or do you want to listen right now?
I think I'm just going to listen right now. I'm pro-life myself. Well, I'm Catholic. Volumes right there. I think the one thing that has always bothered me over the years and still does is, I don't know, when it comes to someone being raped. Okay. I still struggle with that. Is it up to the person? Like, you know, why does, well, of course, it's my church stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm,
but for
mm-hmm.
some to be taught, basically, that it's like your life or the baby's. Like,
yeah.
I've often wondered, I mean, because I was sexually assaulted at a young age. You know, I had attempted rapes, things like that. But I always wondered, you know, what would I have done? You know, and what if the woman who does become pregnant, what if her mind can't handle it and she commits
mm-hmm.
suicide? What if she
mm-hmm.
goes insane? You know, I don't know. I still struggle with
it. It is. Yeah, I I'm Catholic, too. Nancy, I'm Catholic, too. We can't get on this subject too much here. But I'm Catholic, too. But the thing of it is, there are those ifs. What if, what if, what if? And I get it. I get it, okay? Because it does make a person wonder, you know, we didn't ask to get raped, okay? And if it was incest, oh, my God, who would want that? Because the baby's probably not going to be normal. And if it's the mother's, you know, maybe she's sick or something, you know what I'm saying? I get that. I get it. And I struggle with that, too. I do. But anyway, that's not what she does. She does all kinds of stuff. This woman is amazing. And she's only 34 years old. And we're all very jealous of her because she's doing all kinds of stuff. So let's get back to hear what you were talking about with what you do. Do you have like 18-year-olds like come in and you can speak to them about, you know, sexuality and all that?
Yeah, I can. I mean, well, so there's different ways. So the Planned Parenthood is definitely just one position, and it's there where I engage more of the adults. It's a virtual program. So I'm essentially
mm-hmm.
doing a lot of these trainings online. But these are adults. So they're like, a lot of them already have like separate careers. They do all these other things. I would say my full-time job, that's why they kind of like intersect as much as they do. My full-time job is actually a social worker at a high school.
Mm-hmm.
So there I would say that's where I engage more of like the teenagers and things like that. So I have the opportunity, you know, with both positions, but with the one, I'm more engaging adults in that way.
Well, that's good. That's good. You know, to have a social worker in the school is so, so important, and they have to be one that, you know, understands, you know, all kinds of abuses, too. And so often,
right.
They don't. They don't get it, or they look the other way, don't they? Okay. Rather than to get involved with that. I'm going to put Lori on. I haven't heard from her in a little while. Lori, go ahead.
What you're doing is amazing at your age, as I said, is amazing. And what I'm doing over here listening to you, I'm realizing that you're one of us at a young age. I'm not dating myself either, but I'm up there. So this is very refreshing to me that we have support coming in that's very positive. Community work is the best work to do, and sooner or later, you're going to be able to, like, recognize everybody who doesn't fit in, everybody who does fit in. You already can size up a person. So, you know, it's refreshing on this end here. I'm just amazed that you're able to put so much in a day, you know, so many activities, and how you come to think of it. I honestly think you went through what you did to become who you are today, honestly. And I think the memories you don't recover are good. Let them not recover. You just keep going forward. You're
right.
A leader. You're a leader.
Yes.
And this is what the world needs. So you do it. You're the chosen one. I'm sure of this. I'm absolutely sure of this.
Wow. I agree with you. I agree with you. Because, you know, a lot of times when kids go through, I'm not going to say just domestic violence. That in itself is a horrific thing. Now, every once in a while, I will mention that, and this is true, they found that they've done many, many, many studies. But a child who witnesses domestic violence, whether they get hit or not, okay, is equal to the trauma of a soldier. Now, Lori's heard me say this before. I've said it maybe 3 or 4 times on the show. Now, how do they equate that? Where do they come to that conclusion? How do they do that? But you see, when children are watching their parents grow up, say they have their mother and father, okay, but they hate each other, and they're hitting each other, and maybe one gets blown away or whatever, you know. So then you have the soldier standing next to, you know, this scenario, and the soldier watches his buddy get his head blown off. Now, one thing that they have, you know, when soldiers are in war, you know, they're working together, they're living together, they watch each other's back. So, you know, it's a very traumatic thing to see, just as it is for the child who witnesses the mother and the father who's supposed to nurture them, okay, nurture them, guide them, love them, tell them what's right and what's wrong and why, and all these other things that, you know, that go on. And so it's the same type of trauma. If you were to do the ACE study, I'm sure you're sure you know what the ACE study is. I was a 9 on that. There's only 10 questions. I was a 9. And the only reason why I didn't hit 10 was because none of my people went to jail. Because they asked if a family member went to jail. And that was one of the questions. Well, had that not been there, I would have been 100%, okay, because no one got caught and went to jail for any of the transgressions that they did, you know, to me or to any other family member. So all the traumas that we go through, and we don't take a yardstick here. We had someone on not too long ago where they said, well, okay, I only got raped once. Yeah, and once is one time too many. Okay, you're not supposed to get raped at all. And you can have just as much of a traumatic type of, you know, problems as someone who got raped many, 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 many times. Okay? So, are you still there? I heard a click in the line.
Oh, no, I'm definitely here.
Oh, okay. So anyway, what these things happen, you know, to us, it definitely causes all different types of trauma. So, you know, people, they call me, I'm the night owl, and they call me in the a.m. hours, and I'm used to working a.m. hours and so forth, so it doesn't bother me. But we're here to support each other and also to, you know, give resources and things like that, programs which we have on our NASCA website, which people can go to, and it's important that people find the help that they need. A lot of people can't afford a therapist, they can't. So a lot of these programs are just about, I think maybe give them $50 or something and you're in. And that's a lot cheaper. I hope it's good. I have got a lot of good feedback. But what I want to get to right now is, what do you do on your show? You say, I host a podcast called Santana Says. Tell us about the show.
Sure thing. So that was also, it took me forever to actually start it. I wanted to start it like years ago, but it was that whole, you know, not only, it's still grappling with trying to believe in myself. So I, even today, like I so appreciate you, Lori, like what you just said. And I'm still working on actually accepting when I get those compliments, because I get really bashful and then I'm like, oh, I don't know what to say.
I know what that's like.
You know, it's still a work in progress. Yes, I'm always like, but I sincerely appreciate it, because I think that's still been part of my process, just being able to say that, you know, agreed, it wasn't in vain. Like, it wasn't in vain what happened, and I love telling others that same thing. And like you mentioned about the memories, agreed. For the longest, it bothered me, but I'm starting to come to terms with the fact that, but you don't need them. You don't, and there is absolutely a reason for that. But also, and you're still here. That's the most important part. And so, like, you know, use that. And so speaking of all that, I finally, you know, I got encouragement from some great friends and people who put great people in my path. And so I was able to finally start the podcast, which I launched last year on my birthday. So, like, it was on my birthday. I was super excited. So in October, I'm an October baby. I was able to finally launch it. And so it is actually a combination of what we've described today. So on Santana Says, I do talk about, the crux of it is relationships. And so I'll talk a lot about healthy relationships and like what they look like. But I actually do go into detail about not only my own experience, but then, so like you said, you know how like it was really valuable having teachers and all that. I'm actually still in contact with one of my teachers who, like, I met in elementary school. She's remained in my life since then, which is incredible to say. She actually comes on the show. The person that encouraged me to actually start the podcast, she's a guest on the show. And so I bring different people like that. And so, but in the process, I love touching on all of the areas of interpersonal violence. And so not only domestic violence, which is mine, but then we used to work at the Rape Crisis Center. And then obviously I do the work with Planned Parenthood and all these other things. And so I also talk about like sexual assault. I'll talk about stalking, because I used to educate and still do on those areas as well. A bit about teen dating, violence, mental health. And so like this month, given like you said, I did have an episode on sexual assault awareness, so that aired. And then tonight, actually, another episode is airing today, because mine is a biweekly show. So there's a show that drops every other Friday. So today I dropped another episode, and that one was in honor of Child Abuse Prevention Month. So I brought on someone who I met, cross paths with at my school. She actually put on programming for our students, and it was around grief actually too, because we also had lost a student. And so she also talks about how she advocates for children and what she does. And so I love just bringing awareness to all of that. But in the end, really just trying to empower others. I share a bit of my poetry on the show also. So it's a little bit of everything, but it is love. Now it's like a labor of love. I just love doing it. It's part of my self-care, I would say, because, like, when I go on, I love, like, being able to indulge. And even today, I love, like, being able to have, you know, come on here as well. But that is, you know, what I get to do on that.
Well, you know, this is what we talk about, though, and it's so true. If we're able to help other people, all right, if we're able to do that in whatever capacity, whether it be the homeless, because I work with the homeless at times. I did in New York City. I was born in New York. And So was Lori, by the way. So anyway, the point is, New York City, as much as I love it, you have to be really careful today. So the group that I was working with, they sort of like shut down, and I'm sorry that they did that, but they're afraid to go into the city. I mean, can you go into the Bronx, really? Well, I don't think so. I mean, there's certain areas, all right? So we stayed close more to Manhattan, you know, over by the theater area district, because there were two parks over there. And there's homeless people everywhere. This is disgusting, what's going on in our country. I'm going to keep it at that. I won't say any more because I'm not allowed to talk politics. But I can say that. So anyway, whether I work with the homeless or whether I work with kids or whether I work with adults, I mean, I'm always busy, 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 and also doing a lot of research so that I have topics to speak about. When we don't have someone, you know, like a guest that's coming on, like tonight you came on, we're so happy you did. Now, you know, you are very diversified in the sense that you have worked in different areas, and I really do admire you. I absolutely do. And I'm glad that you had this and you spoke so much on the podcast. Because there's a lot of people that listen, you know, and after tonight's show, I mean, everything is recorded here, okay? In fact, if you want to hear tonight's show, you can go to our website, okay, and on the right-hand side of the website, that's NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA.org. And the only thing that will be there, don't look for your name, but look for the top number. And this is scan number 3170. That's 3170. And you click onto that. So on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see it. And it's down like not even halfway, somewhere in there. You'll see 3170. Click onto it, and there's your show. And then later on, Bill will put it in the archives, and that'll be permanent. It stays there forever, forever, Melissa. Okay?
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, and you can find that easy enough, too, under the current events, I think he has it under, down at the bottom of the screen. Or he says either events or shows. Shows would make more sense to me. But you can click on to that, like, say, tomorrow or the next day. It might take him a couple of days to do it, put it in there. And all you do is find your name, the date, and the scan number. Don't forget the scan number, the 3170. That's very important. And then everybody, anyone in your family, if you want to do that, you know, whomever, or your friends, whatever, can hear the show tonight. Okay, it's there forever. And we had a very good show. Yeah, and we had a very good show. And I'm so glad that you, you know, that you were able to make it. I love it on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays when we have our shows. I'm going to have organizations come on very soon. Trying to get them scheduled, and we have organizations that we work with, and they do such wonderful, wonderful work too. Like Winona's House, that's one. Deidre's House, that's another one. Child Help itself is another one, and I have had them going to get them scheduled. So whether it be organizations or whether it be people telling their story for the very first time. And who are very scared. Now, you did fine. You weren't scared, I don't think. Okay. And but we have people that are very frightened when they first come on because they're bearing their soul, aren't they? This is what you do. You bear your soul. But by doing this, it actually helps you. And then, you know, you continue on telling your story. And as you tell your story, whether it be sometimes in churches, I had churches that accepted me to do that, to tell my story. Or in universities where they're learning to become a social worker so that they can work with the people who have, you know, in child abuse, or even with police departments. I've spoken to that, and that's people who need to be more educated, you know, about child abuse so that when they do get their calls and they do go out, they can make a quick scan of what they're looking at, you know, and hopefully not going to be abused themselves. And but they can see the children, see if they're bleeding, see things, see bruising. If it's nighttime, it's hard. But you can tell by the way a kid's behavior, their body language tells an awful lot, doesn't it? It talks about whether they're scared or whether they're sad or whether they're you know, whatever. So that's very important to learn all the signs of what to see and what to look for when you're looking at the children. If they don't make eye contact, if their head is down, there's a big, bad problem, okay? It could be anything, but there's a bad problem. So a lot of times, I've spoken to police officers, and we all do this. Many of us go out and do presentations. This is the way. Look, when I was when I first wrote my book, there was only one other book like mine online on Amazon. That's it. Today, if you look up child abuse on Amazon, you'll find many, 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 well, a couple hundred or whatever more. I don't count. I don't know. You know, books. So we have come a long ways. I wrote my book like 12 years ago, like 13 years ago now. And so they're selling like hotcakes. And then also two people are writing children's books, and I very much appreciate those because parents out there, if you go online to our NASCA website, you'll learn how to speak to your children and when the right time is. Just open up the right links under prevention. You'll see it. And it has all different types of articles, and you learn a lot from that. So anyway, this show is going to be over in about 6 minutes. Lori, what time do you have?
My clock only says 9:15, but they did the electricity today, so I may be off.
Yeah. I think mine is off by about 6 minutes. I think it's like 9:20. What do you have? Melissa, do you have a clock in front of you, whatever?
Yeah, mine says 9:16, so we are like a minute, a couple minutes different.
Okay, we're doing good then. All right, good. So before we do close out the show, though, what we do is we ask the guest, you know, to talk about, to give advice to people who are listening right now about, you know, the abuses that you were speaking about and how you can overcome. Now, you're a shining example, like Lori had pointed out, that you didn't get into the drug scene, okay? And but still in all, you had problems with, picking partners. I think that's a biggie with all of us, whether you get into drugs or not, you know, because of the way we're brought up. But, you know, let them know that there's hope. What would you tell people today, okay, about, who have been abused? Go ahead.
I would definitely say that, and even, you know, one, that our life is absolutely a journey for a reason. I feel like we are going to go through, you know, so many different stages. And obviously, given, you know, since we have shared where I'm at, not only where I'm at emotionally, but, like, you know, and since we did share that I am, you know, young, I appreciate that. And I feel like, you know, at any age, that's how we know that there's growth that can happen at any stage in our life. You know, because I feel like I'm finally actually starting to realize how young I am. You know, I was that typical person that when I first got to my age, I was thinking like many others, like, oh, I'm actually getting older and this is different. And, you know, now I'm realizing the grand scheme, no. Like, I still have so much more life left to live. There is no rush, you know, and there's so much more left to discover, and that is what I'm excited about. I feel like there's still so much more that I can unlock. You know, there's so many new things that I have yet to still discover, even with the experiences I've had. And I definitely want others to know that that absolutely is true for me too. And I think that for the longest, there have been times where I counted myself out. You know, I didn't, as you all heard, like, I was robbing myself from many opportunities. It took me a long time because I was thinking that I didn't deserve it. You know, I had been thinking that, no, I wasn't worth any of those things, and that, you know, in a lot of those situations, including the one relationship I was in, I had heard a lot of defeating messages. It was physically violent in nature, but I heard a lot of insults that were very hard for me to overcome. You know, it took me longer to recover from that, I would definitely say, than the, you know, the physical scars. And I, you know, had to take that time to really, because of that, fall back in love really with myself, since, you know, that had been broken. And I want people to know that not only do you deserve to do that, but I would love for others to give themselves permission to do that first, because that is something that I feel like I needed to do first and foremost. I had to just even let myself know that first of all, I did deserve that, and then give myself the opportunity to do that. And so I'm still working on that. I'm not done. I don't think any of us ever will be, but I think the beauty of it, you know, is being able to see our value along the way and be able to allow ourselves to see ourselves so much more than what has occurred to us and not just as the sum of what has happened to us. There's so much more than that. And I want others to absolutely be reminded of that. And I hope that, you know, tonight you hear that, but just always, you know, and whenever you can. And if I can be a resource to anyone, if I was a resource today or can be in the future, I would love to, because I feel like we can't do any of this alone. And we shouldn't have to. And I just think that, you know, as long as we can and we can band together with one another in that way, I would love to be a part of that.
No, we'd love having you on the show. And, you know, once you come on and tell your story, and you were a fine guest, yes, you were, you're a part of our family now. You're a part of the NASCAR family.
Love that.
And you can come on anytime you want, Monday through Friday, okay? You know how you have the telephone number. Okay, and you know what time to call in, and you can be on the panel or you can listen to the show, whatever. And as time goes by, I mean, maybe you'd really like to become a panelist, you know? Maybe you really
Absolutely.
Like that. And you have so much to offer, all right? You really do. And maybe we could even put you on a show for yourself. We have that on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Where, you know, you deal in so many different expertise here, areas, that we could maybe have you for a Tuesday or Thursday night. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into the schedule. And you know, I don't know about that. I have to see. But you could certainly fit in there because of your education and what you're working with and all this other stuff. People need solutions, okay? They call me in the AM. I'm a counselor. And they call me in the AM, and like Lori knows, if she wants to talk to me, it's really probably better, unless she sees me online or something, to wait until like 1 or 2, because I have to sleep sometimes, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes I'm up that late. Like I'll take my shower at 6:30 in the morning and hit the sack, okay? Depends on who's calling, all right, what their needs are and so forth. We always need more resources, if you could give us, you know, at another time, you know, things to talk about with resources, who are good resources, who you feel are good resources, that's always something that if Bill approves of it, he could print that, and it could be right on the website. You might be a very good resource, okay? We'll talk more about that. So my contact number, by the way, is on the front page of the website under contacts, and you just click onto it, and I'm number 2, and I say, hey, Bill, I should be number 1. I love to tease him, but anyway, I'm second on there, and I'm also, after my name, it says the Night Owl, so you'll know that that's me. You see Night Owl, you know you've got the right thing. So if you want to talk about future events or something like that, and maybe more things that you could do on this show, please feel free to call me in the afternoon, okay? And we'll talk, okay? Can we do that? I think so. So before I shut the show out, I haven't got the 90-second cue yet. I'm going to have Lori say goodnight to you, and then we'll go to Nancy. And Philip just, he just dropped, I don't know. So Lori, go ahead.
It was a pleasure to listen to you tonight, for real. I was down in the dumps about the way the system was turning out so negatively. But after hearing your story, which was truly heartbreaking, and then going to where you are now, it's a wonder that, you know, you could do 12 hours a day twice, you know, over, like, constantly every day, because you have that kind of energy. And the way you get information out, you do it very quickly. I've been taking you down. I was a court reporter. You're in a speaking at over 300 words a minute, mid to high a year. So, yeah, I mean, some people, like, don't get it, and they'll ask you to repeat. That would be the only reason. But every word that you say was a pleasure to listen to. You're so positive. So I do hope you come back. I'd be anxious to hear you again. And I'd listen to your podcast, too.
There you go. You bet. You bet. Yeah, let's go down to Nancy here. Nancy, what do you have to say? Do you have a quick question you want to ask her? Because we have a few minutes left yet. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I enjoyed listening to it and learning, of course. And
I listened to what you had to say, Carol, you know, about when the child witnesses the domestic violence. I'm one of those, and my ACEs, ACE score was very high up there, except my parents never were in jail. I'm an only child, and that's all that I witnessed from the beginning, and I'm not sure which ways it affected me exactly, except that, I don't know, I hope to tell my story sometime, or that portion of it. I'm a survivor of many different avenues, so to speak, but witnessing the domestic violence is, it's pretty horrendous. I feel like I've become overly affectionate, not in a weird way, but my arms are always open, and I seek affection and hugs and closeness and hand-holding, because I never saw that. All I saw was beating. My mom was screaming, starting, you know, fights. And
we know about that.
You're an only child, and you're just there like the, it always feels like, I keep going back to Mommy Dearest, like, Jesus Christ. You know, when I was a little child, my safe space was under a dining room table underneath the lace tablecloth, and then she'd pick it up and tell me, you know, look what you caused. Well, what did I have to do with that?
They do that a lot, Nancy. Let me say something to you. If you want to really, you know, come on the show, okay, and tell your story, okay, get your head together, what you want to say and all that stuff, you know, sit down and write down all the things you want to talk about. And that's sort of like a bio, because that's something we're going to need from you.
Right.
It doesn't have to be fancy, okay, just so we have something to work with. Like I have Melissa's bio in front of me, okay, so I would need your bio in front of me. If I'm running the show that night, you want to be on Friday nights, be on my show, I'd be delighted to have you, okay, too. And but get yourself together, and you can give Bill a call, you know, and speak to him, or you can call me. And we're right on that contact list, the NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA.org. You type that into your browser, and it should come up. And
I have numbers, and I would limit it to, like I said, there's many different avenues that I could, you know, speak on. The one thing is, and stemming from NASCA as a child, through a child's eyes, you know, how it did affect me, just being the sole survivor, so to speak.
That's,
you know,
right.
Nobody to compare notes with. Not having a brother or sister or brothers and sisters or somebody to go, man, what's up? What's going on? And have somebody hug me or me hug them if I were the older sibling. And it was, you know, I always called myself a walking question mark because I had no clue.
Well, it'd be great if you came on, you know, and let me tell you something. The more you come on, you listen to stories, like Melissa had said also, and other people have said, when you get that, now I've got a 90-second cue, but when you get out there and tell your story, it makes you stronger, you tell your story, and you're helping people, and that's helping you. So just remember my words, and if you need to talk, go to the Night Owl, okay, under the contact list, and we'll discuss, you know, your coming on the show, okay?
Yeah, I'd very much appreciate that, because I'm sure it will benefit somebody somewhere along the line. You never know. If you just touch one,
absolutely,
it makes a difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so I have to, I've got this thing on my ears.
Oh,
I have to close the show up. I'm happy you called in tonight, too, honey. I'm happy. We're all happy. Okay.
I'm going to be a part of the Ariel Castro with the three girls that were rescued
10 years ago. I'm going to be helping out at the 10-year anniversary of Amanda Berry, Michelle Knight, and Gina DeHaze's next Sunday.
Oh, that's Sunday. Wonderful. That's
and
wonderful.
I'm very happy to be invited. I'm happy to be there and be of support. And I hope people will find it on their local TV channel or the news or whatever, because that's so special to me, and I relate so much to Michelle Knight.
Okay, listen to me. We're no longer on air anymore. It just shut off. So give me a call, and we'll talk about this. And when you tell your story, you can mention this also. So, Melissa, I want to thank you so much for coming on. And I have a good weekend, everybody. And we'll see you again on Monday night. Good night now.
Okay, good night. Thank you.
Good night, honey. Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.